everybody. This is Lauren Baker, founder of Search Engine Journal. And with me today, I have Marty Weintraub, the founder and marketing lead at AimClear. Hey, Marty, how's it going?
It's better now that I get to see you, my old friend.
I know, it's been a while. How you been?
Really great. Like most people, hunkered down, surviving an unfortunate global pandemic.
Oh, yeah, it's too bad. Too bad that happened. We had a lot going for us. You feel like you see light at the end of the tunnel?
Yeah. Yay science.
Yes. All about it. So this is the fifth installment of a five-part series that we're doing on SEJ about the U.S. Search Awards and the Search Awards in general. And just really, like, I found that at the end of the day, this series has been really helpful in terms of communicating wins and communicating campaigns, not only to win awards, but a lot of the tips that I've had from whether it's been Simon Heseltine or Frederick Vallès or Nikki Wake or Mark Trapagan, and then I'm hoping from yourself as well. A lot of those tips have been really helpful to me to, like, not only, like, sometimes as SEOs we tend to be in the weeds. We're talking about a lot of data. Marketers in general, right? Digital marketers talking about a lot of data. We're in the weeds. And when you put us in a boardroom, we start quoting and name dropping and talking about this in Google and that in Google. And a lot of the challenges that marketers have at the end of the day tends to be simplification, right? Taking everything that you do and being able to communicate it to your boss or to whoever is running budget internally at the company that you're working for or working with, or even clients and client C-suite. So that's one thing that I found. And Marty, it was brought to my attention that AimClear has set the record for U.S. Search Award wins.
Yeah, we have 17, which is at present most in American history. And that's remarkable because there's so many incredibly talented companies, and it's always a close up and down competition every year. And it's more of a testament to our wonderful clients and my gifted teammates than anything.
Where do you keep all those awards?
We've got a big ass case that has 6 Inc. 5000s and 17 U.S. Search Awards. And I walk past it and I go, man, that's a lot to keep doing.
Yeah. It can be. So that's awesome. So I'm happy to hear that. I'm happy to hear that things are going well in Duluth as well. But before we get started, since this is brought to us by the Search Awards themselves, and the deadline is right around the corner, let's talk about that a little bit. All right. So today's Search Engine Journal podcast is brought to you in association with the U.S. Search Awards. It's their ninth year, Marty. It's almost
nine years.
Isn't
years,
that crazy?
Years.
Number nine. So it's been 9 years that the U.S. Search Awards has happened. It feels like just yesterday. And this year, there are 43 different categories, which seems like I don't know if the show is going to be longer or what. I know it's probably going to be virtual this year, but 43 categories. I hope the bar is well stocked, because that might take a little bit longer than usual. And judging by the team, judging is done by a team of international industry leading search experts who follow a rigorous, ethical, and transparent two-step judging process. We've missed the early bird deadline, which was last Friday, but don't fret, because this Friday on June 25th is the final deadline to get your awards in for the U.S. Search Awards this year. That's the final deadline, because
guess
almost
what we're
immediately
doing this whole week, Lauren. Guess what we're doing this whole week.
I know. So almost immediately, judging begins. A short list is announced next month, and then finally, the Search Awards themselves are going to be held on October 7th. So for more information, it's ussearchawards.com. And with me today, I have Marty Weintraub. Marty, you're just talking about how you guys have set the world record, or the U.S. record for the most U.S. Search Awards won. So that's fantastic. Please tell me and our audience a little bit about yourself, Marty, and what you specialize and what AimClear specializes in as well.
So we would consider ourselves entrepreneurs and marketers. Also, I'm a photographer and speaker. I founded AimClear in 2007, and I would call us like driven. We're an integrated marketing agency, and we're great at getting customers. In those 17 awards, it was the last five in a row, best small integrated agency. And what makes us different in the way we think about things is how everything is performance. It's performance branding. It's performance everything. It's integrated performance marketing. And we've gotten to work with some really amazing clients over the years. We're in beautiful Minnesota. We've got a large office in Duluth, Minnesota, which is what you can see here, and another office in St. Paul. That's AimClear.
Nice. That's great to hear. So by just if we can back up a little bit, but integrated digital marketing or an integrated agency, what exactly does that mean?
It means how things work together. Like examples of integrated marketing would mean, okay, so we ran a branding campaign. How do we see results from that? Well, we see more direct traffic and we see a higher site-wide conversion rate. And performance marketing in that city, search pay-per-click and retargeting, is cleaning it up in average lifetime value compared to what it was before. Integrated is the way things work together. It's the effect of paid search on this, or the effect of SEO on that. And it also means sequencing messages from channel to channel in a coherent lifecycle pathway to purchase. When you think about the attribution path, a pathway to conversion, integrated means that we're sculpting that in advance and on the fly to make sure that we're sequencing coherent messages from channel to channel, touch to touch, and always using data to figure out how to do that better. What's needed? How can it be more efficient?
You're doing organic, paid, social, a lot of Facebook, I believe, a lot of data-driven branding, PR, everything across the board is part of that, right?
Yes, like we have massive clients that are just PR clients and huge clients that are just performance acquisition in the Google and Facebook ecosystems. And we have specialty clients where they need to mash up reputation stuff in Reddit, subreddits at the same time as we clean up Google SERPs and find a way to turn lemonade into lemonade. I was gonna, you don't want to make it worse. So it's whatever.
So a little bit over 100 years ago, this quote became fairly famous. John Wanamaker: "Half the money I spend on advertising is wasted. The trouble is I don't know which half." Is that still relevant?
I would say not so much for top level marketers, because the only reason to throw spaghetti at the wall and not know how it's being spent is if either the marketers don't know what to do or the system is broken. These days, there shouldn't be very much trouble figuring out which half is useful, even in light of things like iOS 14 and how that has affected things. So I would say that doesn't apply. There's always unattributable things in the marketing universe. Like in our business, Lauren, we get people that give us drop a contact form in the website and say, "Saw you speak and this other person who works at your company speak 8 years ago, and then again in Australia, and then I read an article that you were quoted in Search Engine Journal, and then saw you speak last week at blah, blah, reminded me that I've been meaning to call you about this thing that we have." Like, if that person didn't, like, how can you possibly attribute that kind of random stuff? But far and away, the vast majority of what we do is attributable somehow, or we wouldn't be allowed to continue doing it.
Yeah, and what I like about that is your example of seeing you here and reading your column here and doing this here and that here and that here, and then all finally coming together. goes to show that it is an integrated path, right? There's no, very, very seldom do you see a linear journey happening where someone sees an ad, clicks on the landing page, fills it out, makes a purchase, and then they continue to make purchases from there on out, right? There's all kinds of influence happening. There's all kinds of things all over the place. Even a branded campaign, branding campaign may not see an immediate, if I'm not part of a branding campaign, I may not know what's happening, but if I look at Google Analytics and my direct traffic, I see a peak, I want to know why, right? That's when I email the team, hey, what are you guys doing? How come there's a peak? Is this a trend? Is this a flaw? Oh no, we just launched a new radio campaign in such market. Aha, that's why.
So I saw one that blew me away today. We have a longtime client where the name of their company is a top category keyword that they own. And that's the name of their company. So if you type in like the top category keyword, it's the name of the company. And so if you check Google Trends over time, search frequency for that word has not gone up over time. Mm-hmm. But direct traffic for the domain that is the literal URL for the keyword has been a hockey stick. And we're going, why? Why? Like, how is that happening? Like, why is that happening? How can search not? And it's a very interesting mashup. And there's millions of different mashups that surround it. Yeah, I think it's fascinating.
Very cool. Very cool. So let's get back a little bit into what you guys do and these awards. How did AimClear become an agency that's set the US record in terms of search awards won? What kind of campaigns are you typically working on? Can you give me kind of a sample of what you're doing from a campaign specific component, what the results have been, and then how you guys typically operate if you're launching a campaign, if you wouldn't mind?
Well, first, I'd just like to put in a pitch here for how well you enter the awards itself. Like, the question is, what are we doing that results in the success? And it's not really about awards or whatever, but I do want to say a slight thing about the awards. Fill out all the sections and answer all the questions, and where it gives you instructions, do that. Because Lauren, you've judged awards, right? You've been a judge. So most people just don't answer the questions, and that's a big part of it. I myself am really rigorous about the targeting piece. Mm-hmm. And so we have a checklist that we go through for audience targeting that really divides up first and third party data and usage thereof. We've always been keenly concerned with psychographics. Psychographics like Facebook was in 2015, and where we can get that very intense specific targeting now. We're very tuned into wars and turf wars between companies like Apple and Facebook. Most marketers are aware of the iOS 14 Facebook dust up. And in general, we've always been into developing personas. Not really, personas in the past weren't really personas. They were theories. You can make real personas now. We've always been really concerned with the intersection of paid and organic targeting and how they augmenting itself. And now these days, that's also account-based marketing at the individual level. We make dossiers of individuals and we market to known groups of people. Also, these days, there's competitive engagement generators, like pull down a list of 16 tweets in the subcategory that gained a lot of engagement that maybe our competitors laid out, making a list of all the people that engaged, filtering it by words in their bio, sorting it by authority, and then making a Twitter tailored audience, if that's what they're calling it this afternoon, because it says multiple things in the UI right now. So competitive engagement generators. And we've also always believed in branding. The ultimate branding is a sale. Sell something, I know you branded that thing. And branding is actually the ultimate no cookie targeting as well. Mm-hmm. So for my part, I always want to make sure that we're just like targeting the right people as the first step of it.
Got you. So in terms of defining persona and putting together those target audiences, where would you recommend someone starts, whether they're running a Facebook ad campaign or whether they're launching a blog and they're trying to figure out who to write for or what to write
for? Great question. Well, ultimately, your audience research needs to be about segmenting your data by who they are, persona, and intent, what they aim to do. We can talk a lot about the miraculous cluster, Frank, of first versus third party data and third party data made from first party data and additional filters and all that. But leaving that aside, we have a checklist that we go through when we do our research. First, we look for integrated search and psychographic. We want to know what they're asking for and who they are. And then the big thing, like what makes targeting is if you could serve an ad to them or send an email to them or reach out to them. And if you can't address them with some kind of paid or organic media, it's not targeting. It's bull. It's not targeting. It's a theory. It's who we think the personas are. So we undertake integrated search and psychographic research. And then we want to know where we can target them. These days, there's different ways to know who your audience is. A lot of times it's from your CRM. There's tools now where we can reverse engineer email addresses in a CRM by third-party display inventory that includes intent. So we have a list of emails, and we know that 60% of them drive this kind of category of car, or they like this media, or they're gonna buy contact lenses or something like that. So we identify any audience data targeting lists that the client might have. If we go deeper into this, we can say more, but this would be social engagement, retargeting pixels, CRM data. And then we look at that and recommend either segmentation or different ways to target those lists. And we look through data to figure out what they have, of course. Now we're heavy into programmatic data partners research, names like Axiom and Epsilon and a million others. And then OTT, over the top, whichever initials you decide to ascribe to that, which means Roku or other set top things. We're at a place right now where an agency our size or any company for that matter can decide, I'm going to take a layer of psychographics like they're out of work truck drivers and then serve videos on ESPN, maybe when they're watching a fishing show or something. We look at the social targeting generators as discussed. We do influencer and public relations targeting, hardcore e-commerce, shopping channel definition and targeting. That's Amazon, soon a DIY Walmart, Google Shopping, brand and competitors targeting. There's more on the list, but it gets down into the weeds. We just go, who are they and where can we get at what pieces of them?
Have you used... You're talking about, I haven't heard this referred to as over the top. You have me thinking about that Stallone truck driver movie right there. You had the arm wrestling film, but over the top OTT or CTV, whatever advertising, whatever you want to call it. How available is that for almost anyone to do right now? Is that something that's doable within Google Ads from a YouTube targeting perspective on like YouTube TV, or how broad of a range is that?
Do you want me to mention brand names of DSPs, Lauren, or do you want me to? Yeah. Yes. So look at Adelphic, Adelphic, Adelphic. Look at Centro Basis. Look at Brand Zuka, B-R-A-N-D Zuka, like Bazooka, Brand Zuka. The latter, Brand Zuka, it's really, there's a fairly low barrier to entry. They're about democratization of third-party display data. And what they do is they offer it across the networks, the OTT networks that we're describing here. And they have 150 data partners, and they made their own targeting taxonomy of common denominators. So they made their own targeting outline across what you could get in a volume by combining various data partners. And then literally you could scrape a video from YouTube, upload a banner, and then upload a banner and then blanket an area of the country everywhere. Like, or you can layer psychographics on top. It's super interesting, and it's sort of you're gonna see a generation pop up right now of appliances like that that do interesting things. Whereas Central Basis and Adelphic, they're entirely different animals. They're deep tools with some workflow features in some places. Where you could put to like they with these tools that are becoming available to mid-size agencies up or even smaller agencies, like you used to have Starcom or Omnicom or right. These are the, because they have the real data partners, you just have to be prepared to overpay until you're at a high volume of media spend, but you have intent data. We're going to party like it's 2016 on Facebook. Party like it's 2062. Like, there's, I should make up where I'm wearing my artist formerly known as hat. So the blessed news is that that's, we can, yeah, we have access, we have all that. And we know how to use it, because any marketers that sold a lot with Facebook between like 2014 and 2016, and then had that kind of go away to other channels. And also OTT and the psychographic input, really it's program. We don't need to get hung up on it coming into a television set. Really what it is programmatic video, audio, and display.
If I had to pick between Google and Facebook for pure psychographic inventory right now, and I just had to choose one of them, I would pick Google, just because the targeting in the display section of Google is so amazing now. Like, you can layer. I have a really cool chart of what you can layer in Google display area that I will offer you as a leave behind for, I'll send that along to you.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. Hey, Marty, you down with OTT?
Baby.
Yeah, you know me. Okay.
Baby.
Awesome. That's really interesting to hear. You know, I've been following this a bit, and what's interesting to me is that, first of all, the thought 5-10 years ago, the thought of buying a commercial was something that was just like so out there, right? Like, buy a commercial where, on a network? How do I do this? Are there rate cards? Do I have to put together a production? How does that work? Yada, 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 right? And then the fact that, the fact that you can do it and not just target a demographic network, so to speak, but target where the person is online. So yeah, Marty, you're sharing that at right now.
Yeah, you have to ask, like, here's this is Adelphic. Hold, let me go full screen here. These are examples of the data partners, mm-hmm. J.D. Power, Nielsen, Oracle, Neustar, amazing stuff. And the question becomes, when does that add extra perspective? Look at this. This is one of the targeting clients. So you could serve banner ads or videos to paid or unpaid persons serving in healthcare settings who have the potential for direct or indirect exposure to patients or infectious materials, including body substances, e.g. blood tissue and specific body fluids, contaminated medical supply. That is some pretty specialized data. Here's another data partner, data for all things home buyers, home sellers, and home ownership. And where do they get it?
I don't know, Remax, Caldwell Banker, Century 21, and Southby's. Just like, bite me. Like, that's amazing. I mean, and you can take that data, and if you take the distribution network, like, okay, so what does it mean if you show a video on Fox then, or Fox News? Like, in the olden days, as digital marketers, if we wanted to imply perhaps more conservative political views, we would need to add a layer of that. In this case, we know that from the distribution channel. So if I lay another targeting attribute over that, I already start with conservative politics with the and operator. And so the game in OTT is understanding if there's any extra perspective that you're applying by the distribution channel. A lot like you make in display space in Google, if you choose 1,000 publications, say all the digital marketing publications, and you're there with search, you're targeting people who read Search Engine Journal. That's where I'm distributing. So there's no targeting in that yet. I'm just distributing. Now we do the ones who like something or who are searching for something. Know what I mean? So the fascinating part about OTT is actually where the users are, like in their day. In their head, what you know about them from the channel that they're consuming it in. It's fascinating, really. Like, we're going to change. Well, we haven't made this decision, but I know there's people that I respect who don't call them ad operations anymore. They call them media buyers, which is like back to the flipping future. They're media buyers, man.
That's how I started. I started media buying, and we used to have these huge books that would be published like every month. That would have every magazine, TV, radio station you could buy from, and then all the prices. So you go through, you'd flip through, you'd find their phone number, maybe their email, if you're lucky, and call them and negotiate the buy. Now it's all done digitally, which is pretty amazing. The thing is that how is the pricing on all of this? Like, hey, Janelle, how's the pricing on all of this? So like, if I want to get super hyper-targeted, okay, so let me back up. We cut the cord in our house about a year ago, right? So everything I watch like right now, if I'm watching ESPN, it's typically on YouTube TV or like other shows that I would typically watch on cable or antenna years back are now I'm watching on YouTube TV. And the one thing I've noticed is that there's a lot of dead space. They'll run the national ads, and then there's typically a space that's set aside for either the cable, the local cable operator, or the local station to resell those ads. And a lot of the time that's still blank. Is that where a lot of these would be shown? Is there inventory lagging? Is this remnant, or is it integrated within typical digital commercials? Like, is there a set aside space for this?
What's interesting is that using DSPs can sometimes get you premium space in networks that you can buy directly, including Google. And the inventory comes from different places depending on what network that you're dealing with. And that's all handled behind the scenes. So far as the costing, it's CPM with a markup for the DSP. And if you want, as an agency, with the markup, but that's not how we charge for our time to do it. We do a fee that's based on the hours that we spend on it, which makes it really attractive. And so the cost is it can range from traditional banner video space, which can be pretty inexpensive, to very expensive, depending on the competitiveness of the space. More importantly, how much data you're using. These days, DSPs are various degrees of transparency for how much you're paying on a markup for them being the middle person on the data. And the classic trick of all time with DSPs is some people say that subtractive targeting, that you're not charged for it. And so I know marketers who use this programmatic data, and their game is to keep the cost low by only doing subtractive targeting and ruling out everybody who wouldn't buy it, which is a counterintuitive use of the data, but it's very inexpensive.
And then opposed to ad rates, I need to back up a little bit too, because we first started talking about integrated, being an integrated agency, the ability to influence the customer decision-making journey wherever, whenever they may be, right? Because we're all not sitting in front of our computers. I was in a meeting today, I was on three devices. I was in front of the desk, and I had to go take my kid to basketball. So I'm on my phone, on my headphones on the way there, and then I'm in the car on the way there. And then of course, like the car connection was off and I was called, you know, yada, yada. But point being is that people are all over the place right now, right? So with just like you have retargeting where someone does a search on Google or somewhere else, a different engine being Yahoo, maybe not .go, but and then they go to the page and they'll get ads to the rest of their journey until they bought the product, and then many times even after they bought the product. Where does OTT play into this? Can you run retargeting on TV as easily or the same way that you can with display ads?
It's not the same way that you can, but yes.
Okay, gotcha. And then what about audio advertising as well?
Yes, Spotify, Pandora, yes.
So you have really the ability to bring in the whole spectrum. This is full spectrum marketing right here, which is pretty amazing.
And it's the frontiers for agencies our size, and the agencies that are going to survive long into the future and fancy themselves integrated are going to need to understand this piece. It's like everything else. As a marketer, if you say, what's the most efficient way to sell something now? And for me, the answer is always going to be paid search. Just if we're not talking about cost, if people know how to search for it, as opposed to a category defining product where someone wouldn't know how to search for it. But if there's search inventory, just as a marketer, I think that the easiest way to sell something is when somebody is asking for it now and it has shopping intent, like shopping centric search intent. Like really, if you could only do one tactic in the whole world, you'd have to consider that. There's some niche products where you could get them with social or display inventory and it works just really great. But if I had to choose between one platform or the other for the rest of my life, I can only use one on a desert island, and it was Google or Facebook, I'm going to pick the Google ecosystem because they have everything inside it that I need. There's usage of my first party data. There's usage of my first party data to target people. There's search intent, there's psychographic display inventory, there's remarketing. I can run campaigns to people that have watched YouTube videos. Just like the products and the ad units, it's true that there's specialty inventory and other channels, ways of targeting and ad units that we really super like. But if I just have to, and like before we do a lot else, a lot of the time, we want to prove that, tell me, you can't afford to do this with paid search. Tell me that nobody searches for it because they don't understand it. Tell me there's no inventory. Like if I'm sitting with you and we're trying to decide what to do in your thing, I need to understand that paid search isn't going to work. I also don't like that Google has the Christmas knob, the one where it reaches up over here and turns it slowly to the right, which is the amount of your Christmas money they get. Google's Christmas knob that they turn every year, like the Christmas knob, the Hanukkah knob, the Kwanzaa knob. Like, so anyway, I digress. Oh, so the point I wanted to make about that is it doesn't really replace anything. It's another channel to extend. They're all the same people. like, or a lot of the same people. I mean, for any product, there is a top of the funnel, and that's what the top of the funnel is. It's the prospective marketplace, and you could catch them in all different places and all different ways, but that is the group of people. So for each channel that you have and each method of targeting and retargeting that you have, really, you're just going, where am I getting these people in their pathway to purchase? Where am I getting these people in the cycle of their day? Where am I getting these people in the phenomena of our culture, or the weather, or the pollen count, or the home team lost? So OTT, it just sits in there, and it's a different piece of the marketing puzzle for every different marketer. Like, there's some marketers, they just run Facebook ads. That's what works. They retarget into Google display and they're done. Like, the mix is hardly ever a kitchen sink like that. The mix is, what do we need to serve that function in that part of the marketing process for that, those users for this product now?
Interesting. And then, so being able to have an integrated campaign that's hitting the user wherever they are from a journey perspective on their way to buying or reinforcing their buying decision is something that's working very well with you guys, working very well with your clients. It's worked very well when you've articulated that into an awards entry point with the US Search Awards. And it's something you always have to stay on top of because this always changes as well, correct?
It does. Each year when people write there, here's what's going to change in 2019. Here's what will change for marketers in 2021. When they do those ads, when they do those blog posts, I always like to write one. What's guaranteed not to change in 2021 in marketing? And what's guaranteed not to change is that these wars are won with products. Laura LePay said, the best SEO is a product that doesn't suck. Like, the best,
that's true.
The best marketing is a product that doesn't suck. And here's how it works. This is the universal truth, Lauren. You could have a product that it's just miraculous and everybody wants it and you're the only one. Your job as a marketer is to not to screw it up. Or else you could have something, it's kind of the same as everybody else does, or lots of competition, maybe costs the same, maybe just a little more. People don't love it, it's mixed. Like it just kind of sits there. It's a pretty good sized market. There's competitors. And then whatever your vertical is, that's not actually the business that you're in. You're in the marketing business because it's all the same stuff and the best marketer wins that. And then you have a product that, I don't know, it's subpar. Like, it's a monkey product. It's pretty dumb. Like, and you could even sell that if you're a good marketer. It's just, you can't wrap a turd up in a bow and expect to get resales. So the universal truth of all of this about it changing is that really it's like Michelangelo said about the sculptor. It already exists in the stone. And the job of the sculptor is to remove the barriers between the outside and the beauty. And marketing's like that too. Like, the number one attribute you want in a marketing campaign is for the client or the product to just kick ass, just be the best.
I learned that the hard way in one of my first campaigns I ever did doing my independent consulting. I took on online reputation management for a national flooring and carpet company. And my plan would have worked had they stopped dropping people's furniture and breaking it when they were moving it to install the carpet, had they actually installed the correct color carpet, had they actually
and
not
been nice to the customers when they called up to complain.
Yeah, exactly. So ORM can work, right? Online reputation management can work. SEO can work. But at the end of the day, really, you don't want, it's not a two steps forward, one step back, or one step forward, two steps back scenario where you're constantly pushing that, I mean, analogies aside, you're constantly pushing that boulder uphill, right? And you need to get a little bit of support, or make, if you can, make better decisions upon what kind of work you're taking on. Because if someone's continuously breaking their site, if someone's continuously putting out bad product, if someone's continuously breaking people's furniture, that's going to cause issues, and you're not going to be able to achieve the goals that you want to achieve at the end of the day as well. So being able to market a fantastic product that people are buying more than once or subscribing to, or maybe they start out with the cologne and then they buy the candles and then they buy, I'm watching Houston right now on Netflix. So starts out with hats and then dresses and then cologne and then rugs and then everything else. But point being is the ability to expand that average order value or that lifetime value of the customer helps you at the end of the day if you're doing that marketing plan, because you know that that ROI is going to be effective. If you can get that customer to buy a product that you know they're going to fall in love with based upon the research you've done around their audience, chances are they're going to become more important at the end of the day. And if you're just going for traffic, if you're just going for quick sales and you're shipping out something in bad packaging that's half broken, that melts on the way to the mailbox during the summer, chances are you're not going to have that return customer. You're not going to get the ROI that you're looking for from a marketing perspective.
What he said.
Thank you. Okay. Marty, it's been a pleasure. I can't believe it. It's almost the top of the hour. I just want to remind everybody that today's show is brought to you by the U.S. Search Awards. 2021 is going to be the ninth year of the U.S. Search Awards. The final submissions for all 43 categories are due in. That's SEO, PPC, digital marketing, and content marketing are due in by June 25th. So that's this Friday. And then after all entries come in, after less than 3 weeks, there's going to be a judging session. And then the shortlist is going to be announced on July 16th. You ready for that? You ready for judging? Are you judging still?
I get to judge the European and UK Search Awards every year.
That's a nice trade-off.
And so because we enter US, and also awards are important just because it just means that you have success with your stakeholders, your brand that you work for, or the agency's clients, or I was aware that the Search Awards were sponsoring this, and like, they're amazing. Like, they do so much for our community. Like, I don't need a sponsorship to tell them something to say that. I love Nikki Wang. I think she's awesome.
That's true. I had a great time talking to Nikki the other day. It just blew me away. And especially like what's impressed me about what she's done is she found something. She got into this 9 years ago, at least in the US, and there was a void. And there was a void in the UK beforehand in an industry that's been around for 12 years. And she was able to come in and then dominate the space, right? So it doesn't happen very often. So it was really nice to see that. Marty, it's been a pleasure. How have I been doing on my disclosures? I know you're really big into that, like sponsored content and disclosure. Am I disclosing enough?
I think you're above and beyond the call of duty. Dear FTC, Lauren discloses. But one thing about Search Engine Journal is that I don't think you've ever taken advertisers or sponsors for stuff that sucked. Like the reason that Search Engine Journal is successful is because it's really good and because it has a lot of integrity and the founders have integrity. And like, it's never a problem to just, like, it's a feather in your cap to have the Search Award sponsor your stuff, Lauren.
Thank you. That's great to hear. That's great to hear. Yeah. And funny enough, we do turn away quite a bit of advertising.
I'm sure you do. We don't take every client either. We don't. Yeah. So I'll say it back to you, even though you're the host with the most. I love you guys, and it's so nice to connect with you at the end of the dark tunnel that we've been in, and wishing all our kindred marketers the best of reemergence, and reminding that the monarch butterfly, the chrysalis, evolves from the cocoon, and yeah, whatever the order is there, welcome back to the world, and you're all so fine and smart and beautiful. Like, it'll be just really great to see you in person again.
Agreed. Same. I can't wait. So thanks. That is a great way to end things today. Marty, it's been a pleasure. Can't wait to talk to you again. It's been great catching up with you on the show and beforehand. Everybody else who's been able to tune in today and to live on YouTube and Facebook and Twitter, and to our those of you that are listening via your podcast app of choice, thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you, Marty. Thank you, US Search Awards. And thank you, SEJ team, for making this happen. Anything you'd like to say before we say goodbye?
Someone's crying, my Lord. Kumbaya, the Lord.
Don't ever tell anybody you saw me do that unless they pay you.
I won't. And that part I will not edit out. How about that?
Oh no.
All right, Marty. Well, thanks so much. We're gonna run into our outro right now. So I'll talk to you soon. Thank you everybody for chiming in today, listening, viewing, and we've been sharing a lot of the examples that we've been talking about in the comments. Make sure you go through the comments, click some of those links. There's some pieces from AimClear. There's information about the US Search Awards, a lot of the OTT stuff we were talking about. And thank you to the artist, or a fan of the artist, the folks in the Minneapolis, Minnesota area, Duluth, and AimClear, of course. So thanks, Marty. Appreciate it.
Bye, Lauren.